The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Football Weekly, greeting the brand new week with big questions. What hope do Leicester have in Madrid? Why does Sid think Juventus will beat Barcelona? Will Sunderland ever score again? Which club regularly puts their fans in hospital? Who did Arsene Wenger meet in the sauna? And how did we fit all of this into one compact little podcast? The answers lie within this Football Weekly, and they're not the only ones. So then, Football Weekly, featuring today the vocal talents of Nick Miller.
Hello, James.
Hello, Nick. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hello, Barry. And also, Raphael Honigstein.
Hi, James.
Hi, Rafa. Got plenty to discuss with you, and in fact with everybody, because there's been lots of football, and men say there's more on the way. Should we start? There's all this Champions League stuff, but should we start with a quick recap on the Premier League? Premier League, which saw all the top six winning, apart from Arsenal, who will be playing this Monday night, but all the rest of them have gone and won. Chelsea had that win at Bournemouth. Spurs 4-0 against Watford. But they're still seven behind Chelsea. Liverpool came from behind to take the 3 points at Stoke. Man City, 3-1 victory for them against Hull. Rafa?
I'm wondering, should we call it a top seven now?
Everton?
Yeah.
Well, we had Ian McIntosh, you know him, lovely chap, suggesting repeatedly that Everton were possibly of that band, that merry band, until they played one of them and then the wheels came off, rather.
Right.
Yeah. But we can talk about the Everton-Leicester game. I was going to save that for the end of the Premier League top teams bit so that we could then segue in seamlessly to our Champions League chat, which, listeners, is coming up in part two and features not only Rafa, but also a certain Sid Lowe. So can we talk about Spurs? Because otherwise, you know, we get complaints on that. They beat Watford 4-0 and they were really impressive. Janssen's clinical finishing once again in evidence.
Yeah, it was an outstanding performance by Tottenham Hotspur. I thought Dele Alli magnificent again. Son has just become the first Korean to score 10 or more goals in a Premier League season, so hats off to him. I think people thought there might not be a place for him at Spurs at the end of last season, but he's very much proved there is. Kieran Trippier laid out his credentials to be labelled among the top five fullbacks in the Premier League, and he just seems to be unfortunate that two of them are ahead of him in the pecking order at Spurs. He was magnificent.
Only his third start of the season, though.
Yeah, that's remarkable. I mean, when he was at Burnley in the Championship season, when they came up first, he provided an extraordinary number of assists. It was something like 18 from fullback. And you wonder, is he happy to be part of what's obviously a very exciting project at Spurs, but only a bit part player, or would he rather go elsewhere where he gets regular game time? Only he knows that. But it was a really, really good performance.
You mentioned Dele Alli. It's his birthday today. He turns 21 on this Monday. Do you know that he's already had a hand in as many Premier League goals before turning 21 as Lampard, Gerrard and Beckham put together?
Does that mean he's, but if we kind of melded those players into one kind of giant Power Ranger style,
he'd be as good as them.
He'd be as good.
You don't have to. They've already done it, and they called it Dele Alli.
Very different positions they play in.
But the numbers, exactly. Also,
more goals than Buffon, Kahn, Neuer.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. Of course, they've been playing longer as well. It's remarkable. Had a hand in as many goals, right? So I think Beckham had a hand in goals. I take your point, Rafa. But anyway, also, Kane is back much earlier than expected. So that's another bit of good news for Spurs.
I felt quite sorry for Watford at the sort of whatever it was, 20 minutes to go. Mm. They were losing 4-0, spirits crushed.
Yeah.
Sloping off back home, and then Harry Kane comes on.
Yeah. And also worth mentioning, I don't know if you saw this on Sky's coverage, there was a you know, the Wenger out banners, yeah? That are popping up all over. There was a Wenger in one, of course, at White Hart Lane.
Those wags.
But anyway, as I say, still 7 points behind Chelsea, because Chelsea in that kind of classic grinding their way across the line after all their earlier excitements. Got a 3-1 win away at Bournemouth. Perhaps a little harsh to say grinding. You know, still some good things to be seen there. Would you like to know when the last time the top division was won 2 years in a row by teams not finishing in the previous season's top six? Would you like to know that? Because Toffee Greg would like to know, and he actually wrote in with that question. Bingo, because that's how Football Weekly listeners are. Dave Whelan is my hero, had his back with this. I believe it was, says Dave Whelan is my hero. 70 to 71 and 71 to 72. Arsenal won the title the first of those seasons after finishing 12th the previous season. In 71-72, it was Derby winning the title, who were ninth the previous campaign. That is fascinating. So anyone seventh or lower next season? Out of all the teams, seventh or lower, which one would have your money for a title bid next year?
Well, it could be Sunderland. They're not down yet. Not down yet.
That's cheeky, Nick.
Sorry.
Okay.
Arsenal.
Yeah. They're not quite in that category yet, but they may well finish there. We'll see what Crystal Palace do this Monday evening. Elsewhere, anyway, in the Premier League this weekend, Liverpool went a goal down at Stoke, but came back to win it. There was a great save from Mignolet. There was a fine goal from Firmino.
Two great saves from Mignolet. John Walters has quite the habit of scoring against Liverpool, who were forced to play the first half without probably their four best players.
Forced or elected to?
Well, I think Jurgen Klopp elected to, in the case of two of them. Philippe Coutinho has been ill and said he was happy to play the full game, but Klopp left him on the bench, and Firmino's been a bit leggy recently, and Klopp said he was tired. The schedule was getting on top of him, so he brought the pair of them on at half-time, along with Daniel Sturridge, and the three of them between them sort of overhauled the deficit, and Klopp celebrated like Liverpool had just won the Champions League.
That's Klopp for you, isn't it? Mm. Stoke have lost four games in a row. Nick.
Mm.
They're 8 points clear of the drop. Is it crazy talk to suggest that they might be at risk here?
Maybe not quite crazy talk. I think they'll probably just about be safe.
They're up against Hull and Swansea next. I'm just saying, if they were to continue this run of defeats against teams that are in the bottom three, then things could get very interesting. William Hughes saying, does Mark Hughes have any ambition? Against lower teams, he says, we controlled the game. And against better ones, he says, we weren't good enough. Curious, because he left Fulham precisely because of their perceived lack of ambition. And there he is, stuck in some kind of footballing limbo in the Potteries.
Yeah, I suppose they've got an outside chance of dropping in there, but the bottom two look done. And Swansea, after kind of recovering initially under Paul Clement, I think have got 1 point from the last five games.
Yeah, it's true. They're looking...
Very poor at the weekend against West Ham. Maybe even sort of even more worryingly...
You were there, weren't you?
I was there, yeah. More worryingly for them, Paul Clement kind of volunteered after the game that his players looked sort of incredibly anxious and sort of crippled by nerves. And it was, you know, it was a big game, but if they're so sort of crippled by nerves against West Ham, then they, you know, they might be in trouble for the rest of the season.
Right. 1 point from
many
five
of those five games that they've failed to win as well were against pretty mediocre opposition.
The one point was against Sunderland, wasn't it? I think it was. Yes.
Two goals in five games as well. Down the bottom, Borough had a 0-0 draw with Burnley. They look in all sorts of woe. Three of the bottom four lost, in fact. Borough's point being the only one that anyone picked up while we wait for Palace. So Palace could actually open up some breathing space. We'll talk about Sunderland and their defeat at home to Man United later. But Man City with a victory over Hull, ending Rafa a run of three draws and a defeat. So that was good. Midfield general pointing out that Sergio Aguero, has now scored the same number of goals for Man City as Drogba did for Chelsea, but in 135 games fewer. That's extraordinary.
A little word for Jesus Navas, who I think he sort of forced the own goal, I think, but he hasn't scored a league goal for City since January 2014. That's 97 games, so he's coming up on his 100th anniversary. Wow. And yet he's still keeps getting in the team.
Right. Claudio Bravo, I mean, people pointing out that once again he conceded. In fact, these last seven shots that Bravo has faced on target have all gone in.
Yeah, this one perhaps a little bit harsh. If you take it in isolation, there was a defender about 2 yards in front of him, so I don't know if you can blame him entirely for that, but you can blame him for letting in more or less every other shot he's faced in the last few games.
That goal for Hull from Andrea Ranocchia, who's his second, I think, in 2 games from the Italian. Ranocchia means kind of big ugly, well, it means big frog. And Quattro Tratti tweeting a picture of one of the great banners of recent times, he put it, Ranocchia, if I kiss you, will you turn into a footballer? And, maybe it's happened.
I was expecting sort of high comedy and slapstick from Ranocchia when he came here. Mm. Whenever I've seen him play before, he's always been good for a kind of comedy mistake, but he doesn't seem to have done it.
Like many things after successful seasons, he's just not funny anymore.
Oh. It's just a lower pace of the Premier League compared to Serie A.
Possibly so, yeah. Anyway, then on Sunday afternoon, uniquely for a team playing in the Champions League, Leicester took on Everton, and that's a match we'll be talking about after this. Everton took on Leicester. My word, that was a blistering start. Were you at that one as well, Nick?
No, I was minute by minuteing that one.
Oh, that must have been frenzied.
It was frenzied. I think 3 of the first 5 entries in a minute by minutes were goals. but the after 3 goals in the first 10 minutes, I was hoping for rather more than 4-2.
Really?
But yes, it was a gloriously entertaining game. The first half in particular, everyone seemed to get a little bit tired in the second half and settle for what they had. Leicester sort of seemed fairly happy just not to have all their players intact for the game against Atletico. They sort of strategically rested a few players.
Although Wes Morgan's not going to be available.
Wes Morgan's not going to be available, but the other sort of key men should be back. Mahrez, who came on as a substitute, should be back, and Didi.
Indeed.
Very good interview with him in the Observer on Sunday.
Oh yeah, what did he say?
He was talking about his how he made it as a professional footballer despite having the disadvantage of being managed by Alex McLeish quite early on. McLeish seemed to think he was a defender, and then someone else turned him into a midfielder, and he sort of hasn't looked back.
Of course, Conte's doing that to Moses at the moment, isn't he? But nobody criticises him or pokes fun at him. Alex McLeish, a visionary, just ahead of his time, perhaps.
There was a lot of criticism levelled at the Premier League and Sky for making Leicester play on the late slot on Sunday. And people were saying the game should have been on Friday night or Saturday lunchtime at the very least. But apparently, and I was trying to find out if this was definite, but I couldn't find any evidence, but apparently Merseyside police wouldn't let them play because the Grand National was on and it would have been too much for them to cope with. But the only thing about that is it used to be traditional for Merseyside Derby to be played on the morning of Grand National Day to just for a big mad scouse party.
Is that right?
But it's no longer the case.
Hmm.
But yeah, it seems a bit ridiculous that Leicester had to play at 4 o'clock on Sunday ahead of the biggest game in their history.
Absolutely.
On Wednesday.
Romelu so far, yeah. Romelu Lukaku, notching up his 23rd goal in the Premier League this season. That's now more than Middlesbrough in their entirety have managed, a telling stat. And we should also flag up the fact that the first of those came from a lovely cross from Ross Barkley, who's not been doing too well of late.
Wonderful cross.
Mm. Right. Anyway, next up, Leicester off to Atletico Madrid. Are they going to get absolutely destroyed there?
No, I don't think so. Why should it be?
Because they've only won one of their 4 away games in the Champions League this year, and that was against Club Brugge. Because they're the lowest scoring side of the competition, the side with the lowest possession in the Champions League this year, and I know that's part of their whole
shtick.
MO shtick.
Antoine Griezmann actually has said that this will be an awful game.
Oh.
No one will want to watch it on telly because it's not going to be entertaining compared to any of the other quarterfinals.
So right.
He's selling it well.
Well, yeah, it's a fascinating encounter, though, and just the fact that Leicester are involved. Well, odds-defying Leicester.
It's like Ian McIntosh said a couple of weeks ago, it's kind of the worst draw they could have got because they're bastards, but Atletico Madrid are bigger bastards.
Right. So,
It will be intriguing, but I suspect Antoine Griezmann might be right insofar as it may not be entertaining.
Speaking of which, let's hear from Sid Lowe, who's at Atletico Madrid's training ground and standing by on line 1.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Good morning, Jimbo. Yes.
Buenos to you. You're our man on the inside. What have you seen?
Well, I think saying on the inside might be a slight exaggeration, as we were allowed to see the first 5 or 6 minutes of training. So I can exclusively tell you that some players did some stretches. And then, of course, we were booted out, as always happens in these situations. So we're now hanging around in the car park. But hey, at least it's a nice day.
I mean, that's something. Is there an atmosphere of nervous tension then among the Atletico staff ahead of Leicester's visit?
No, I mean, I think there's expectation, there's quite a lot of excitement. Let's not be kind of coy about it. The reality is that everybody in Spain wanted Leicester. They thought they were probably the easiest team left in the draw. That's not to say necessarily that they're treating them especially lightly, but it is the draw they wanted. The one thing that certainly has been talked about a fair bit here is the sense that while Leicester might not be the strongest team in the draw, they might also not be the right kind of team for Atletico Madrid, that a team that does similar sorts of things, that's theoretically very strong defensively, that plays on the counter-attack. Those kind of sides have tended to cause Atletico more problems than sides that open up. But I suppose the question mark there is whether it's a problem that the game doesn't have a huge amount of goals, whether Atletico ever find themselves in a position where they feel obliged to go for them. For what it's worth as well, I think Atletico are a far better team and a far more varied team than people normally assume. I don't think they're purely defensive.
Right, although they do have such an incredible record in the Champions League, clean sheets in 15 of their last 17 games.
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. And I mean, they lost that a little bit, Jimbo, this year, and they started being a little bit more expansive and then started getting caught, and they kind of, it always gets talked about here as an evolution. They kind of evolved outwards and then kind of evolved back inwards again. And this has happened 2 years in a row now, this process of reaching a point where you think, this isn't really us and it's not quite convincing, it's not quite working. Let's go back to what we know. Now, I don't think it's quite as clear cut as that. And I think they have much more to them than that. But there has been a sense of, in the last 2-3 months, of kind of Atletico refinding themselves.
A 1-1 draw for them away at neighbours Real at the weekend with a spectacular goal line clearance from Savage, uniquely enough. Can you hit them on the break, Sid?
Of course you can. But of course, it sort of depends when. Because Atletico are a team that, as I say, I think attack more than they're normally given credit for. But they do it reasonably carefully. They will attack, but they will be relatively solid with Saul and Gabby at all times. Koke will be reasonably close to them most of the time. On the other side, Carrasco will go. So they can be got at. And they can be countered, particularly if they go up, you know, for corners and set plays, and you can break quickly from there. But it's not easy to do.
Right. Sid, listen, three Spanish sides in the Champions League quarterfinals this week, if you count Barcelona, who themselves will be over in Turin, where Juve, of course, have an absolutely terrific record there at the J Stadium. 21 European games there, unbeaten there. Barcelona, in contrast, have lost 3 of their last 4 away games in the Champions League, the most recent of which saw them absolutely taken apart by a French side, Sid. Is there, and of course, this weekend, we saw them beaten 2-0, and it could have been worse, in Malaga.
Yeah, and I think you can expand that as well. Cool. I mean, they've beaten 2-0 at Malaga, and they've now lost 2 of their last 3 away games, because, of course, before that, they were beaten by Deportivo La Coruña. So they came off the back of a game where they put 6 past Paris Saint-Germain and lost in La Coruña. They've now lost 4 times in La Liga this season: Alaves, Malaga, Celta, Deportivo. I've already mentioned. And those 4, none of them are in the top 9 in the league.
Right.
And, you know, that sort of tells you something about those moments when they're not quite right. They actually have been playing very well recently. It did feel like after the Paris Saint-Germain game, they kind of found themselves again, that they were flowing a little bit. There was a little bit more pace to the game. But this weekend, they were beaten by Malaga. And I personally think Juventus are favourites.
Really? On what basis? Just because they're so good at defending, or
because of the way in which they play? Because I think they can perhaps manage Barcelona better than other teams can. Look, if the front three for Barcelona play really, really well, then of course it's very, very difficult to stop them. I think I'm right in saying this. I must admit I haven't got the stat in front of me. Well, not stat, the piece of information in front of me. But I think Busquets misses his first game.
Yeah, he
as well.
Does. No Busquets in this,
and that's really, really big. And I genuinely don't know what Luis Enrique's decision will be. My guess would be Mascherano in the middle and Pique Umtiti at centre back. He could go for some other option, but whoever it is, it's not going to be Busquets, and he's really, really important. You look at the way they've rotated this year, and there's four players basically who pretty much never rotate, and of course it's the front three and Busquets.
Yeah. See, that's fascinating. We'll see. I think it's Tuesday, that game, isn't it? The Juventus,
yes, it is,
Barcelona.
Yeah.
And then on Wednesday, Bayern Munich will be hosting Real Madrid with no Pepe. He's got a couple of broken ribs, is that right, from the derby?
Yes, it is. And it means that derby may well be the last game he ever plays for Real Madrid. He hasn't renewed his contract yet with the club. He keeps saying, I'm going to wait to the very last minute for Real Madrid, but an offer hasn't been made. He wants 2 years. It's very likely he walks away at the end of the season. A broken rib in theory means 4, perhaps 5 weeks out, which basically takes him to the end of the season now. Madrid have a bit of a problem at centre-back because he's out and Rafa Varane's out as well, which means they've basically got two central defenders, Nacho and Sergio Ramos, and of course an injury or suspension to one of them would pose all sorts of problems for them. I think there is no doubt in Spain that everybody thought Bayern Munich were the hardest team, the team that nobody wanted to get. But stylistically, talking to Alvaro Morata about this, he said he'd rather play Bayern Munich than Juventus. I suppose, of course, he knows Juventus very, very well, so there might be an element of kind of personal preference in that. But I think it was also a recognition of the awareness of Juventus's intelligence and organisation and how they can cause different types of problems for Real Madrid than Bayern Munich in theory will.
All right, leave us with a score prediction for Atletico Madrid-Leicester, Sid.
I suppose logic suggests an Atletico 1-0 victory.
1-0. All right, Sid Lowe. We'll be speaking to you again soon. You have a terrific time. I imagine you're going along to the game.
Yes, I am, yeah.
All right, well, enjoy that, Sid, and thanks very much for your time today.
Cheerio, Michael.
Cheerio. Bayern Munich, last time they had Real Madrid come to play at theirs, wasn't the best of days for them, was it?
No, they were beaten 4-0 at home, 5-0 on aggregate in Guardiola's first season. But Bayern were arguably at their very best that year, but just ran into a Madrid side that, with Carlo Ancelotti on the bench, had their number that night. They played on the counter-attack. Bayern conceded early goals, then just started chasing game and were completely taken apart in the second leg.
Since then, Bayern Munich have had 16 games at home in the Champions League. How many have they won?
16.
58 goals scored in those 16 matches, 9 conceded. It's the longest winning run in the history of the competition, home winning run. And would I be right in saying that the mood in Bavaria is very much that this is where they get payback?
I don't think it's necessarily about payback because you've had so many years, so many games between those two teams over the years. 23 times, I think, in European top competition, which is the absolute biggest number of any international pairings. It's more a case of can Bayern do it? They've been chasing that Champions League since the treble. They fought in Guardiola. They've got somebody who will get them at least one trophy in those 3 years. It didn't happen. Ancelotti, of course, has a reputation for being a specialist in the competition, so they have got great hopes. And I think they get a lot of confidence from the fact that after a very, very slow, very unconvincing, very indifferent first half of the season, they just started, since about February, to really get on a completely different level. They have an intensity, they have a hunger on the pitch, a humility as well that they had in 2013, where they just kept on going, even though games that didn't mean anything, they just wanted to win every single game. And that hunger seems to have come back.
They looked pretty impressive this Saturday when they took on Borussia Dortmund in one of the biggest fixtures of their domestic season, a 4-1 victory. 2 for Lewandowski, was it? 1 for Ribery, 1 for Robin. I think you can probably picture the goal that Robin scored. Is there any weakness in this side? Is there any way you can get at them?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're playing Real Madrid, so even at the very best, it's still not much than a 50-50 shot. I think maybe you could say Bayern are slight favourites, maybe they're 55, but there is not much between those two teams. At the back, you know, with Mats Hummels being out, it's going to be Boateng, who hasn't seen a lot of action this year. He's been out for quite a long time. He's still not 100%. He wasn't supposed to play in that game. And with him, he's got Javi Martinez, who has been having a very quiet, very effective season, but is sometimes a little bit slow, especially on the break. So there isn't that much pace in this team. I think if Real Madrid play on the counter-attack and play it right, then they will create chances. And away from home, they don't need to do that much. They just need that one away goal, possibly to get the edge. So I don't think there is, you know, there is a sense that Bayern will definitely play them off the park. But what is there is, I think, a added level of experience that perhaps they didn't have 3 years ago. They've got players like Alonso, who of course was also with Real then. They've got Vidal there sitting in midfield. And they just have a bit more stability and a slightly less aesthetically pleasing but maybe more effective way around them compared to the Guardiola years.
They also have the manager who 3 years ago was with the visiting side, Carlo Ancelotti.
I mean, Ancelotti has done something very well. I think he's come in and not imposed any sort of system on Bayern. I mean, that's also the criticism of him, that he doesn't come with big ideas and doesn't perhaps work very hard. But he's just looked at the players and made one or two changes. And after a bit of time where the players, I think, had to get used to that kind of regime after the intensity, maybe the madness of Guardiola, it's now got to the stage, I think, especially with the Champions League looming so large, that the team responds to that kind of
some lovely scenes on the sidelines of late. I think it was last week when, no, 2 weeks ago when Robin came off and was furious to be substituted, and the rest of the bench just laughed at him, basically sat there pointing. And then this week, Frank Ribery came off and again looked pretty unhappy.
Yeah, although there is a suggestion that he was actually just pretending to be really unhappy.
To get
that
a kiss?
Like a stage. Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, you've done stuff like that before, haven't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, Ancelotti, as you said, if the situation was real, I'm not convinced it was. Robin said it was a joke, diffused it by giving him a big smack on the cheek.
Yeah. Nice. Anyway, right. Well, that's going to be an exciting game, isn't it, Barry?
Yeah, I fancy Bayern. I think they have a momentum that Real don't, and they're peaking at the right time. Mm. Robin, Ribery, Lewandowski, I mean, absolutely dismantled Dortmund at the weekend. So
certainly did, whereas Real, as we were hearing, held to a 1-1 draw.
Sorry, there are also rumours, I don't know if there's any truth to them at all, that there's a bit of unrest in the Real Madrid dressing room, heaven forbid,
right?
Various players are apparently unhappy with Cristiano Ronaldo's dip in form by his own standards. He still has sort of got 5 goals in his last 9 games, but
not in the Champions League, he hasn't. Do you know, he hasn't scored in 613 minutes in the Champions League. 33 shots without finding the back of the net. Anyway, these players are unhappy with him because he's not scoring goals as much, or is there something else?
Well, they're unhappy that he's appears to be untouchable and is an automatic selection, whether he's playing well or not. I still think some of the names mentioned, you know, Modric, Bale hasn't had a particularly good season either. So I would be sceptical of the veracity of this talk.
Well, that's huge. Is it Tuesday, meanwhile, that Dortmund, fresh from that defeat in the Clásica, host Monaco? First ever competitive encounter between these two young and exciting sides.
Yeah, and I think it's a game that a lot of the neutrals wanted to see before the draw came out, because you've got two very young attacking sides who are not great at defending. And I think we could well see a repeat of the kind of goal malfection we saw against City with Monaco involved.
Are Monaco even less great at defending than Dortmund are? Because Monaco are pretty not good at defending.
Yeah, I think Dortmund are slightly better. You could see against Real Madrid in the two ties in the group stage, but also against Benfica, maybe less so against Warsaw, where they conceded 4, that they can get the balance right. Overall, though, that has been their big problem this season, that they haven't got that right kind of weight between attack and defence, or you could say the defenders individually aren't good enough to go head-to-head against attackers. They always need that extra protection, which isn't quite there.
Right.
So, and it will be even less there this week because Timo Bakayoko is suspended, their defensive midfield.
Right,
for Monaco, yeah.
Yeah, indeed so. Nick, is this a game that excites you?
I'll be there.
Oh,
I'm going. Yeah.
You're actually going along to the Signal Iduna Park, rechristen the Westfalen Stadion for this, please, careful with your sponsors, occasion.
Yes, I'll be there. It's going to be very exciting, I think. Monaco's quite surprised. Just looking up there, Monaco have only conceded 26 goals this season in the league, which is not
in the
quite,
league, yeah, but in 13 the league, in the Champions League.
Yeah.
In the Champions League, it's been a different story. 8 in their last 2 away games.
Yeah. That'll do again if they fancy conceding as many goals as possible.
Right, when they're facing the likes of, well, Aubameyang, who's got 7 in 7, I think, numbers fans, and who else got? Guerrero, who scored a fine goal. Kagawa. Lots of options.
Pulisic.
Pulisic.
Royce might be back from the bench. Ooh. He might get a few minutes.
Right. So it's going to be a tough game, this, for Leonardo Jardim's side, although they will have Falcao back.
Yeah, Dortmund make a great play, at least in public, about the fact that Monaco might not be able to cope with the sense of occasion because they never play in front of so many people.
Right.
As you know, at home, hardly anyone turns up. Even in the away games so far, they haven't really faced that kind of stadium.
Certainly gets you. I know when we first trod the boards, the Palladium, for example, took a moment or two just to, you know, just to...
Not for everyone.
Not for everyone, that's right, I know. Max was excellent.
Big game players.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, that's the Champions League, Nick. I bet you want to talk to us about the Europa League. How about you wait until after this?
Over the last 18 months, more than 125,000 men have stopped wasting time and money on their shaving supplies and signed up with Cornerstone, who just happened to be the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. Cornerstone have just launched their brand new razor with superheated and ice-hardened Japanese chromium steel blades. Woof! Try it for yourself and take £10 off your first order at cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Hey listener, what are you doing on the 5th of June? It's a Monday, you know. Nothing, eh? Well, if you're anywhere near the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster, you could pop in and join us for Football Weekly Live. Tickets are available now at theguardian.com/guardianlive. Can I pique your interest by revealing that Barry will be there? Producer Ben will also be in a kind of silent gimp role on the end of the panel. And so also will be Sasha Gurionov. And apparently a few of his pals wearing black gum shorts and MMA gloves.
Lovely.
Sounds good. As I say, that's the Emmanuel Centre, but no women. There won't be any women. Or maybe you, listener, are a woman and are going to come along and really shake up our demographic. Look forward to that then. It's Monday the 5th of June at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. Football Weekly Live. Boom.
I betrayed you by featuring on a second captain's live event, and they have quite a lot of women.
Do they?
In their audience compared to the derisory numbers we tend to attract.
Right.
So.
Well, they're a good-looking bunch, second captains.
That's true.
Did they get any Wenger out banners?
No.
I'd be disappointed if we had one at ours. I think we've moved beyond that. Europa League. I can't believe we haven't talked about the Europa League yet. Man United are going to be at Anderlecht, buoyed by their recent success at the Stadium of Light. A 3-0 win against plucky Sunderland. Plucky Sunderland. Barry, Sunderland.
Yes.
No goals now since February the 4th.
Yeah, it's no goals since they came home from their jolly up in New York.
Oh, was that right?
Yeah. The team bonding exercise, which was presumably staged in the hope that it might lead to them scoring some goals.
Right.
And they haven't. So
did Moyes take them to Hooters? Or?
No, he took them to a Red Hot Chili Peppers gig and an ice hockey game. Or a hockey game, as it's called in America. And some other thing, which I can't remember. Grand old time seems to have had been by all. And this, of course, was at the same time they announced that lots of other staff who were paid considerably less than the wasters on the field would be losing their jobs this summer. So it was typical well-run Sunderland.
Anyway, 3-0 this weekend. A decent performance from Man United, and as much as we can draw anything from this?
I don't think you can draw much from it. It's like stealing the pennies from a dead man's eyes. And they were up against 10 men for the second half.
Zlatan scored another goal.
A very good goal, but he was criminally unmarked.
Right. Mourinho picked himself at left back again, using Luke Shaw's body.
Yeah, and gave himself great praise after the game for his performance in Luke Shaw's body. But again, it's Sunderland, you know.
It's like Avatar, isn't it? In the future, it's probably not that far away from what I read. Probably all managers will be doing precisely this. They'll be using not even live kind of bits of meat. They'll be using robot avatars to combat each other. And it really will be mind games then in a very real sense. And I bet probably, you know, we'll be... Ian McIntosh won't even speak to us because he'll be probably one of the most sought after, because he's been doing this for years, training. He's been piloting remotely football teams through championships, often to victories. for years by Football Manager. So it's a chilling, terrifying glimpse of the future, that. Man United are going to be at Anderlecht in the Europa League. This is a really big game, I read, for Man United, because they're not going to get in the top four and that. How tough are Anderlecht going to be? You don't know, do you, Nick? You do, though, don't you, Rafa? I bet you know some choice tidbits about the Belgians. One of two Belgian teams left in the competition. Were I to allow you the chance to speak, you would probably mention Yuri Tielemans.
Yeah, or Sofiane Hany.
All right.
He's looking very useful for them as well.
Is he?
Midfield. But, look, Man United with their squad, even with all the issues with not scoring goals, should really not have any issues with Anderlecht. I mean, this is a complete mismatch in terms of financial potential, in terms of the squad, wages, etc. So this is a wonderful draw for United. There's absolutely no excuse for not making the semi-final.
Right. Also, Anderlecht, I mean, in Belgium, it's probably about as close as it's possible to be to have a continental fixture. Unless you had Scotland.
Oh, because they're so close, Scotland. You mean Brussels. Yeah.
You don't have it. Well, because last time they had to go all the way to Russia. They don't this time, yeah. Clearly. Mm-hmm. Ibrahimovic as well. Last time he faced Anderlecht, he put four goals past them. In fact, five, if you include the one he got in the return fixture. So he'll be looking forward to that game. I'm looking forward to that and the other three quarterfinals, Rafa.
Well, being of the Germanic persuasion, Schalke-Ajax is a pretty big game for similar reasons as for United, because Schalke are, well, even in more trouble. They are nowhere near good enough to qualify via the league route, so they really need to do something in Europa League if they want to be involved internationally next season. They've also had a very up and down, strange campaign, and Ajax presents a real opportunity to make this still a meaningful season to them. It is, I think we've mentioned this before on the show, 20 years since they won the UEFA Cup under Roy Hodgson's Inter, and a lot of people had great hopes for them with the new management duo of Christian Heidel, who's upstairs, and Marcus Weinziel is on the bench. But it's been a little bit hot and cold for them. Now that Burgstaller started scoring, and Leon Goretzka is a player that a lot of teams, including in the Premier League, follow quite closely, I think they have a decent chance of making it to the final.
Really?
Yeah.
A lot of people rate Leon's chances. They've scored 16 goals in the last four Europa League matches. They're hosting Besiktas, who've only kept one clean sheet in their last 15 European games, so goals ahoy there.
Lacazette,
indeed. While Celta Vigo, the last Spanish side left in the Europa League, will be hosting the other Belgian team, Genk, who destroyed Ghent in their last 16 match, and are managed, I wasn't aware of this, by Albert Stuyvenberg. Who's he? He was the assistant to Louis van Gaal for a while at Man United. Apparently. I mean, I literally had no idea about that, but I read that and I presume it's true. Otherwise, they wouldn't put it out, would they?
No.
Okay. All right.
Did you find this on the internet?
Yeah.
Then it must be true.
Must be. Elsewhere in football land this weekend. Now, we've talked about Sunderland and their issues. We talked about the relegation battle. We haven't we? We didn't mention West Brom Saints, but then...
Just interestingly, myself and Nick were discussing Sunderland's remaining fixtures before we came up to do the pod. They have to play five of the six teams above them in their seven remaining fixtures.
Isn't any team above them?
Sorry, five of the six teams directly above them.
Right.
Middlesbrough, Swansea, Hull, Bournemouth, West Ham. And even in the very unlikely event that they were to win those five games, I think they'd still go down.
Really?
Yeah.
It's interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah. Chelsea and Arsenal are the other two opponents.
Right, but it couldn't be a better run of fixtures if you were trying to get out of trouble.
This would trump all their great escapes if they stayed up.
How many points are they off safety?
10.
Right.
Well, 11 really. Yeah.
11. All right then. Now, here's a question for you, Rafa, from George Morahan. What is it about Hamburg playing at home this time of year? What is it?
I think he meant that they beat a decent side again in Hoffenheim, and they beat Leipzig, of course, not long ago. But I don't know. I mean, Hamburg are just incredibly inconsistent, and they're bound to win the odd home game. It was a bit of a surprise because Hoffenheim looked so good against Bayern that they would lose away at the former Volksparkstadion, but I wouldn't read too much into it. Hamburg is still a bit of a mess.
In our last show, we talked about brothers facing each other as managers. Lots of people writing in. We suggested maybe the Charltons. Harry Batt says, yeah, 1973, they were both managing in the second division with Borough and Preston, but he's not sure if they actually managed against each other. I'm thinking it's, if they were both in the second division, they must have, you know, fixtures being fixtures, they must have faced each other.
The 1991 Scottish Cup final pitted Tommy and Jim McLean against each other.
It's known as Motherwell, the brothers' final.
Motherwell played Dundee United, and it seems to have been quite the thriller. Motherwell won 4-3.
Wow.
So Tommy got family bragging rights.
All right, Del Boy Geezer pointing out it's known as the brothers' final. Producer Ben suggests the Giggs have squabbled over a match, but that's not quite... Yeah. BK7811, according to this article, and there's a link... Herbert and Harry Chapman managed against each other three times in the 13-14 season before any of us were born, of course. And Mr. Marco UK says, not sure about football, but ice hockey has had its share, hockey has had its share. Three Sutter brothers coached in the NHL. Even more interesting, or just interesting, is that those three Sutter brothers played in the NHL with their two other brothers, and three of their sons have played too. Crikey, you can't move for the things. Fantificent. Many thanks, by the way, for all your fascinating posts and messages this week.
Sorry, in other housekeeping news, I erroneously stated last week that Hill 16...
Yes.
Ah,
yeah,
go on.
Well, Fantificent says Hill 16 was not built with the rubble of the GPO from the 1916 Easter Rising on account of the fact that it was actually constructed a year before that happened.
Right. Well, it's November a myth 15. Anyway, which I had...
Yeah. Now, okay, so Fantificent contributes a fair amount of explanation. It was basically named for a hill in the Battle of Tripoli, you know, during the First World War, in which the Royal Dublin Fusiliers suffered heavy losses. And in keeping with the tradition of those times, the hill was named in its honour, as in the Kop at Anfield for a battle in the Boer War.
That's a myth they sell at the tour of Croke Park as well. So
yeah. Well, okay, so...
Oh, really?
Everybody suggests that it's Hill 16, but leading local historian Dr. Paul Rouse explains how all this came about. He said, basically, it was originally named Hill 60, which was the hill in Turkey in the First World War. But in 1931, Dan McCarthy, a former GAA president, stated his objection to the name of the terrace, arguing that Croke Park was sacred ground sanctified by the blood of martyrs. Therefore, it was wrong to honour a battle that took place in a foreign country in a foreign war. So they changed it from Hill 60 to 16 to kind of evoke the Easter uprising. On a lighter note, Nicky Fonzarelli says, which manager would make the best holiday rep, Allardyce, Wenger or Moyes? I can't believe Nicky's really asking that. It's a rhetorical question, isn't it? It's Wenger, isn't it, Nick?
We'd all I don't know. It depends what kind of holiday it was.
Yeah, it's Allardyce. Mm. It would be quite hard work, I suspect. It would be emotionally, physically draining.
Mm.
Who would you like to go on holiday with, Rafa, out of those three?
Well, Arsene Wenger, for sure.
Really?
Yeah. I remember that Gabriella bumped into him, not physically, in a sauna in Warsaw, I think. Yeah.
Gabriele Marcotti?
Yeah, he did, yeah. He was a delightful company, Wenger.
Hmm. Moyes would be, just be
was
too
he wearing
sad.
Those kind of speedos that he
I didn't quite get to the bottom of it.
All right.
Okay. I'll have to ask him.
Hmm. That's a very inviting kind of intro into Image. An anecdote. Which do you have any other details or not?
No, they were just as you know Gabriele and Wenger, I guess, they were just talking about football.
All right. I was gonna say I'm sure Gabriele held his own, but perhaps in the context of that image. Right. Ronan, who's a guest here today, was saying, was Wenger out? Anyway, thanks for that, Nick Fonzarelli. But no more delay, I will brook, because it's time to hear what's going on in the Football League, Nick.
Yes. Two promotions this weekend. Sheffield United beat Northampton 2-1. After 6 years in League One, they are finally back. It featured a sensational pitch invasion at the end.
Oh, what was sensational about it?
Well, it was your classic fans gathered at the side of the ground, side of the pitch, just waiting for the final whistle.
Did they stream on from all four corners simultaneously?
They certainly streamed on from two corners that I saw. One chap was holding aloft the corner flag like he was a kind of standard bearer in an army, which was superb. This is Chris Wilder, and managing his boyhood club. Last summer, he very nearly went to Charlton, so bullet well and truly dodged there.
Yeah.
And then in League Two, Doncaster Rovers sealed promotion.
Another Yorkshire side.
The goal was set up. They beat Mansfield 1-0. Goal was set up by James Coppinger, which in what I think was his 529th appearance for Doncaster. He's been there, save for a slightly weird loan spell at Forest for 13 years.
Wow. That's a long time, isn't it?
And then in the Championship, this morning, in fact, Birmingham have felt the need to give Gianfranco Zola a vote of confidence. They lost again, rather painfully, against Derby, of course, managed by Gary Rout, the man they got rid of to bring in Zola when they were, I think, 8th in the table. They've won 2 games since. They're now 6 points off the bottom 3.
Brilliant.
They were actually only off the playoffs and goal difference when they got rid of Rowe.
Wow. On top, Brighton, 7 games to go. What's their? They're 2 points clear of Newcastle. How many points are they off the playoff? I mean, clear of the
12.
12.
So they're
the top two are going to be the top two. Newcastle, right. 10 points ahead of Huddersfield, I think, in third. Huddersfield lost to Forest this week. It wasn't a great weekend for most of the teams in the
certainly
top
wasn't
six.
For Reading.
No. Well, they went into their game against Norwich on the back of 3 wins, sort of faint sniff of automatic promotion. Norwich lost their last 2 games, more or less out of promotion contention. They don't have a proper manager. Their caretaker manager has said a number of times he doesn't want the job. And of course, it was 6-1 to Norwich at half time, 7-1 at full time.
Right. So I'm not sure who this was. Worked out that's 10.7 of all the goals that Reading have conceded this season happened in that first 41 minutes.
It was a tough afternoon for us.
What do you think Yap Stam said to his players after that display at half time?
I don't think he probably didn't say anything, just sort of screamed at them, went around at each individual player and screamed in their faces, and maybe...
You'd like to think so.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Super.
Can we a quick word about Leighton Orient as
Please,
well?
Yeah. Is there good news?
No, terrible news. None of their players, none of their employees have been paid. The latest excuse from their owner, Francesco Becchetti, is that there are technicalities due to a new bank account that he has. So I don't think any of their employees have been paid for about a week, 10 days now. And their doctor resigned last week on the entirely reasonable basis that he hasn't been paid either. They're 10 points shy of safety in League 2. And there are only 5 games left. So
putting the late in Leighton Orient.
Mm, yeah.
Their fans may soon be disoriented.
You got any more?
Well, that's it.
Okay.
It's a miserable business. On a happier note, Rafa, how nice to see Mario Balotelli back and banging with a brace this weekend for Nice, away at Lille. Was it away? It was away at Lille, because, of course, he had to go to the airport afterwards. What happened there, Rafa?
He did a knee slide through the scanners.
Through the metal detector.
Mm.
Yeah.
And didn't set him off.
No.
No bling.
So that was nice.
The security officer applauded.
He did, didn't he?
Which I thought was a nice touch.
You know, Mario. Anyway, nice to see him back in the goals. And that put Nice briefly into second place, although PSG, with a 4-0 win over Guingamp, moved back into second and remained 3 points behind Monaco in the Ligue 1 title race. Sunday night also saw Napoli. You remember on the Thursday we were talking about how big a game that was for them away at Lazio, who had the chance to move to just 1 point behind them. Well, Napoli put them back in their box in a very real sense with a very fine performance in Rome. 3-0 they won that. They're now 7 points clear of fourth place, so pretty much guaranteed of going through to the Champions League unless they have a horrible collapse at the end of the season. 4 points behind second place Roma. Frank Sidekick says, after their thoroughly sexy display against Lazio, what do Napoli have to do to break the Juve monopoly and win the Scudetto next season? I would say buy defenders. Just defend.
Buy Higuain.
by Higuain. Well, they had him before and they didn't win the title, of course, did they? Yeah. But, yeah, you'd really want to sort things out of the bat. That would be my suggestion.
Do you think Sarri, with all the Sarri hype
that's
happening, is he...
Manager of the year.
Yeah. Is he there for the long run, or do you think he might be tempted by maybe a spell abroad? Or
who wouldn't be, Rafa? Who wouldn't be? But I think he's one of those guys who's in love with his philosophy, and he gets the chance at Napoli to put it into practice. I think the project is quite an attraction for him there. But yeah, his name has been linked to big jobs this season, certainly. So
if Allegri were to go,
that would be, can you imagine? I'm trying to think, because I know that Spalletti was linked with Juventus, which I can't see them doing, but he was. But I'm not sure if there was a Sarri rumour at one point. The other Italian news that I would like to mention, if I may, was the fact that Inter got beaten by Crotone, Nick, this weekend. That's back-to-back wins for Crotone, who were the team, I don't know if you're familiar with Crotone?
Enlighten me.
Okay, well, they're basically a very, very, very poor team from a particularly deprived area of Italy. It's right down the bottom end in Calabria, you know, kind of in the instep of the of the boot, as it were. Their stadium, the Ezio Scida, is overlooked by a hospital. And when Juve came to play recently, they had all sorts of people checking themselves into the hospital with fake ailments. And the hospital had to say, we're not taking any patients for the game. Anyway, also what I like about them is the fact that their nickname, they're called the Pitagorici, which is the Pythagoreans. Because
they like triangles?
Yeah, very nice. They, because Pythagoras, yeah, he was, because that area was all very Greek. I'm trying to think, who was in Syracuse? Was it Aristotle? He was, that's obviously in Sicily. But southern Italy, basically, in general, was full of the Greeks and their philosophy. And anyway, the current man doing the philosophy bit is Davide Nicola, and he's taken them now to within 3 points of safety, which is extraordinary because they did seem like they were a cinch to go down.
Isn't it extraordinary how bad, once again, Inter and Milan both are?
You might say that Milan have some justification, given that they've been in limbo for a couple of years now, waiting for this massive deal, the sale from Berlusconi, who stopped spending on the side many years ago, waiting for that deal to go through so that investments can be made. But they had a win this weekend. They're doing all right under Montella, and the derby's coming up with Inter next weekend. Neither of them will make the top three, but Milan look the more likely to get back into the Europa League. Yeah, I mean, it's a long way from the 90s and the late 80s or the mid 2000s. Yeah, you know, teams at the top, teams not at the top, they move around. It's like that stat about the Premier League being won back-to-back seasons by teams from outside the top six. And with that, we come to the end of today's Football Weekly. Or is it the end? Can anything ever truly be the end? Or but an interim
stage? Well, the Irish women's team have been in the news. They will have played Slovakia by the time this pod is available to the listeners, and which is not a very remarkable thing, but they threatened to go on strike before the game because they had a beef with the FAI that they weren't being paid for matches. They were being given tracksuits, which were forced to share with players from other teams.
What? They had to use other people's tracksuits?
Yeah. They basically seem to have had a set of tracksuits for all their women's teams, like from senior down. So some Irish women were complaining, you know, that they'd come back from an away game saying have to change out of the tracksuits in the loos at the airport so they could be handed back and passed on to, say, the under-18 side.
If only the FAI had a spare 100,000 that they could use on things like this.
Well, they weren't demanding much. They're amateur players. They wanted 350 quid a game, I think, just to cover the costs of having to take time off work and whatever. Many of them are students, I think, as well. They wanted quite a small win bonus, draw bonus. And the FAI were refusing to deal with them because they wanted to be represented by the players' union.
Right.
And the FAI didn't want to have to deal with the players' union, which they have no problem doing that in their dealings with the men. So the women quite rightfully said, look, we're students, we're not in a position, or we're footballers, we're students, we don't have the skills to negotiate. So anyway, they came to an agreement, and while all this was going on, they staged a very public press conference last week, which got a lot of media attention in Ireland and elsewhere. And it was very embarrassing for John Delaney, who was at the time trying to get himself elected to the FIFA executive committee. Mm. He did so anyway, which
have
means,
they not just given him a 100 grand raise as well?
Well, he used to earn over 400 grand a year from the FAI, basically, which is financially crippled, I think, at the moment, but still able to give him all that money. I think under pressure, he took a bit of a pay cut, but he's still in the high 300s, but he'll now get an extra 100 grand a year from this FIFA. FIFA gig,
right,
or UEFA gig, plus very lavish expenses. Now, he has said in the past, many people in Ireland think he's an absolute clown, but he seems to be Teflon, you know, and seems to be untouchable in his position as FAI president. And he has said in the past that, you know, he earns his money because the job occupies him 24 hours a day, seven days a week. But he appears to have found the time to do this, take on this part-time role with UEFA, which at a conservative estimate would use up about a third of his working time.
Combined income now, €460,000 a year with daily expenses of €300 a day.
Yeah, it's good work if you can get it.
Mm. And they're playing Slovakia this Thursday. This Monday afternoon.
It's Monday afternoon. So it will have been played by the time people are listening to this game.
Penn gets this out. All right, then. So that, I say again, is the end. Or possibly, you know, Nick, anything else you want to add?
No, everything has been covered.
Rafa?
Just wondering, you know, last time I was here, we had a little bit of a debate about Claudio Ranieri. Just wondering, in the meantime, has your attitude softened a little bit towards that decision from the club, or you still adamant that football has died?
Speaking for myself, and I never use the phrase football has died or the game has gone, but I wouldn't say that my attitude towards the decision has softened, but my attitude towards whether it was the right decision has maybe changed. But it's kind of hard to put this into words, but it was accepting that was something, that was the whole issue, was that there was something different about Leicester's story that meant it didn't have to be kind of contaminated with everyday business decisions. But yeah, what they've done under Craig Shakespeare is quite ridiculous. And it does completely underline that they should have got rid of the old boob probably a lot sooner. And Lord help the next team he pitches up at.
Is it not acceptable to accept that it was the correct decision, but also a nasty decision?
Yeah, there you go.
That would be my view.
Yeah.
Football is a nasty business.
It certainly is, Rafa. It certainly is. And we'll be back talking about more the midweek nastiness. Listeners, I hope you can find time in your busy schedule to join us then. For now, many thanks to Barry, to Rafa, to Nick and to producer Ben. And we'll see you soon.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.